This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's Bloggers Roundtable, a black college student in Mississippi goes missing. So why isn't most of the press paying attention? Plus, new controversies over DNA testing, and a Maryland judge threatens jail time for parents who don't vaccinate their children. Joining us today is Chris Rabb, creator of the blog Afronetizen. Also, Kay Tempest Bradford, her blog is The Angry Black Woman, and Michael David Cobb Bowen from cobb.typepad.com. Welcome, everybody.
Hello, Fry.
How you doing?
I am doing great. So let's start off with this case of the young lady at Jackson State University. She disappeared nearly 2 weeks ago, but her case hasn't gotten very much media coverage. Her name's Latasha Norman. She's 20 years old. She was last seen in one of her classes. Her car was left on the campus, but she never returned to her dorm. Now, the Jackson police chief is white, and he says race is the reason why her story isn't making national headlines. The FBI, however, is involved. So, Kay Tempest, do you think that this is yet another case where there are just racial differences in how much human life is valued by the press?
I definitely think so. I really feel that minorities who go missing definitely don't get the same coverage as white people who go missing, and sort of it's sort of become a joke now, which is really sad that, you know, a young blonde white girl, you know, it disappears and everybody is all over the place trying to figure out where she is, but some young black woman disappears and only her family cares. One of the things that has come out of this, there's a website called missingminorities.com, which attempts to highlight in, you know, whatever way they can, the many minorities who go missing every year that the media just doesn't cover.
Do you think that works? Chris, you are a net roots activist. That's one of the terms that you use for what you do. Do you think that that kind of activism could be applied towards an issue of missing persons?
Well, I think it's an interesting approach. I mean, ultimately, when I would receive emails over the many years of black folk who've gone missing and were not and their cases were not reported by the media, it was sent via email, and people said, you know, if you've seen this person, pass it along. However, there wasn't a science or rigorous methodology for sending it to folks who were in the area or areas where those people were likely missing. So I think if you combine some cutting-edge technologies and some collaborations between local institutions and individuals, this might be a real good alternative to holding your breath and waiting for mainstream media to equalize the presentation of information about missing people regardless of race.
Michael, is it also an issue of class where this young lady's family is not rich, not high profile? The college campus is a great school, but not high profile. Do you think class also plays into this?
Absolutely. Just this weekend, I was avoiding TV, but whenever I turned it on, all I heard about was Natalie Holloway, a new break in that case, and about fires in Malibu. And I think that's something to do with the way our culture looks at, we want to see bad things happen to people that we want to be. And so we will follow the misfortune of people who look like or who appear to be something that we wish we were. And a lot of black college women do not have that going in their favor. But I would say that any press coverage is better than no press coverage. I checked Court TV and they say there's something on the order of 2,300 people a day who go missing. So anything that bloggers could do is better than milk cartons. This is obviously a very large problem that we've only just begun to take more seriously. Yes, class plays a part of that as well.
Chris, I want to ask you about a different topic, a different kind of mystery, the mystery of DNA. So I know that you've had a great interest in this. New stories out on the fact that Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates, who's been a big supporter of black folks using DNA to trace their roots, has some questions. According to the New York Times, he says his concerns date back to 2000. One company told him his maternal ancestry went back to Egypt. Tests from another company said that his maternal ancestors were European. So Science Magazine reports that 460,000 people have used DNA testing to try to trace back their ancestry. What's your perspective on this?
Well, I take this fairly personally because I've done 11 DNA tests for 11 different ancestral lines, nine of which reportedly go back to someplace in West Africa. one to North Africa, and one to Pakistan, which was very surprising. I knew all along that this technology is still in its infancy, but I think what the New York Times and a lot of mainstream media outlets do very poorly is contextualizing why and how these tools are used, however fallible they may be. For African Americans, we embrace an entire continent. We don't have the good fortune and benefit of identifying a specific country or culture. We come from the most anthropologically diverse continent and the biggest one on the face of the earth. So Africa has some meaning, but it doesn't have the specificity and intimacy that other ethnic groups in this country and beyond experience. So just being able to know what region or what area within a region our people may have come from, even if it's not 100% accurate, gives us a connection that we otherwise didn't have. And it has more to do with identity than genealogy. In other words, we're not trying to find out about a specific ancestor, his or her name or language or such. That would be great, but really this kind of puts it in a geographic context, which has cultural implications, even though one genetic test may only represent 1/32nd of our pedigree, of our ancestral background.
Chris, let me ask you this. You have taken these multiple tests. Did you take them with multiple firms or all with the same firm?
Actually, I took them with the only firm that has a large database of West and Central African peoples, because otherwise, if you're taking a test with a database that has very few black people, how good are the results going to be? They all use the same methodology, more or less. So really, it's the one that has the deepest access to the people who we are likely descended from. And so I used AfricanAncestry.com, which incidentally did one of the tests for Skip Gates at it, for his celebrated PBS special. So I think it's kind of ironic that that Professor Gates is going with the company that has presumably a much smaller database of African peoples than the one he used for his PBS show.
Well, Kay Tempest, there is Henry Louis Gates recently teamed up with something called Family Tree DNA. It's a firm in Houston, Texas. And he says that their venture, African DNA, is going to combine all these records, help black people find their roots. Does this come off as self-serving if he's criticizing one group of companies and then partnering with another one? Or is it just all's fair in academia and business?
I think it's definitely a case of all's fair. At this point, whatever he can do, whatever anybody can do to sort of get these DNA companies together, get these databases larger, I think is going to benefit everyone. I mean, you know, as the article said, at this point, you know, we've expanded so rapidly, you know, from only a couple of companies that do this to now several companies that do this. And maybe in the future, that means that unfortunately, you know, the market will drive us to have bigger databases, to have more sharing of information. You know, competition, capitalist competition, does have its uses in that way.
Michael, before we go to you, I just want to reintroduce what we're doing and our topics. This is NPR's News and Notes. I am Farai Chidea. This is our Bloggers Roundtable. Today, we were just hearing from Kay Tempest Bradford. Her blog is The Angry Black Woman. Also, Chris Rabb, creator of the blog Afronetizen, and Michael David Cobb Bowen from cobb.typepad.com. Michael, what about this whole question of trying to get back to the source? Some people have said, okay, I found that my ancestry is from Sierra Leone, some people from Ghana, some people from Southern Africa. Should it matter to us where we are from?
You know, I'm kind of skeptical on this whole thing. I kind of land on the side with Arrested Development. It just takes me back to Tennessee. And I think just doing your own personal research in a family tree can be a great deal more illuminating. I've actually done that over the years, and I found about 600 folks back to seven generations. And it turns out that I'm related to Marie Laveau, the voodoo priestess.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the voodoo priestess of New Orleans. And I have family that goes back through St. Lucia and France on my mother's side. And I think those things are very interesting, as well as the controversies you get into when you start asking your Aunt Gladys, you know, about her three husbands. So those kinds of things are more real and material to me than the symbolic link back to Africa. And I'm also pay attention to what I call a scientific animism. I mean, most of us cannot identify cholesterol under a microscope, and we basically have to trust the label. And so we basically have to trust these companies that what they're telling us is useful and real. It's not all, you know, CSI Miami. There's certain things that just can't be determined. And I think it would be just as good if people just decided, I'm going to adopt Ghana as my native home country and learn something about the culture. Because it's not all blood.
Well, we definitely are going to keep following this story. Before we move to another topic, Chris, would you consider going and getting a second set of results from another company?
Yeah, in fact, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, these things are expensive, too. And one of the
How
things,
much?
Well, roughly around $300-$400. So, you know, the people who can afford to do this are not necessarily representative of the people who want to do it, which also has some class implications. And but I do think that just in the inquiry, finding out that there are in fact thousands of different cultures in Africa is news to most people, black or white. And that level of cultural diversity is something that Americans need to know about. Particularly African-Americans, who are as ignorant about our African ancestry and culture as everybody else for the most part. And that's disturbing, but that's an opportunity. Now, we don't have to say that science is the only way to do that, but people want to know to whom they belong and where do they come from. So part of this inquiry can be the exploration of cultures that, you know, we didn't even think existed and that we really see our blackness is something that started after the Middle Passage, and we need to go before that.
Well, definitely we're going to keep following this story. Kay Tempest, I'm going to move on to a controversy that has to do with America's schools. In Maryland's Prince George's County, parents can go to jail if their children are not vaccinated. 10-day sentence. There's a deadline, November 17th. Officials say that at the beginning of the school year, more than 2,000 students were lacking the required shots. The number dropped by nearly half since this court order. Now, do you think that PG County went over the top with this kind of a threat of jail time?
I would say probably, only because it just seems like threatening people with jail time, it seems like a very harsh sentence for not immunizing or having the records to immunize their kids. You know, there were stories that there were records of immunization that the school board or the schools lost them. And I think in that instance, definitely, you shouldn't blame the parents for the incompetence of school officials to be able to keep, you know, these records and keep them well. But at the same time, immunization is really important. Doing something to make parents recognize that importance is definitely a good thing. But then there are other issues that come up, like parents who have an objection to immunizing their kids for religious reasons or whatnot.
Right. Michael, what about that? Is this one of these issues where parents should have some degree of say over whether or not this is voluntary? I mean, there's, on the one hand, there have been disease outbreaks even in colleges where students have died from, say, the measles. And then there are these questions of religious objections or other objections, health objections that some people have to vaccination. What kinds of rigor should parents be allowed to have in terms of these kinds of decisions?
I think it's a little bit of over the top here. And unless there was some kind of declared public health emergency that the Centers for Disease Control or the local health authorities were saying, we have a serious problem here and drastic means need to be taken, then this judge is out of bounds. There are all kinds of reasons, and especially, you know, as a family that moves a lot, I've seen those reasons where you can't get access to these records. And the school administrative staff might be on vacation, or you might owe money to the old doctor who doesn't want to release the records. There are any number of reasons why you can't immediately produce these kinds of records. And the healthcare industry is pretty bad about that. I mean, considering the kinds of things that we've been able to do with technology and banking. I mean, you can do your banking online. I could sell my own house. I could write my own will. Why can't I access my own medical records online? We're just behind on that. And so to push these particular parents into that little bottleneck seems very unfair to me.
And Chris, it's not just about the parents. The kids could be actually blocked from going to school if they don't comply. And there is this question of whether or not all the records are easily traceable up to date. Do you think that there should be, as Michael suggests, some kind of a technological way to really access all of this data instantly?
Oh, absolutely. We need the political will to make it happen. And I think very cynically that there are those who want public schools to remain warehouses of, proto-20th century workers, not 21st century workers. And as a result, we don't invest as we should in the future of this country. And it's also an irony that this judge, anyway, is considering this a public health concern when far more people die from gun violence than measles. Particularly, this is a suburb of D.C., and the D.C. is taking action to control the use of guns in its own border, so to speak, and they're being challenged by that. So it's a tragic irony that we're talking about jailing parents and punishing kids for choosing not to or not having access to records regarding vaccinations.
All right, Chris.
Protecting ourselves from real issues around gun violence.
Well, Chris Tempest and Michael, want to thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you, Farai.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Chris Rabb is the creator of the blog Afronetizen. Kay Tempest Bradford blogs at The Angry Black Woman, and she was at our NPR studios in New York. And at our NPR West studios, Michael David Cobb Bowen. His blog is cobb.typepad.com.